for the love of goats. We are talking about everything goat. Whether you're a goat owner, a breeder, or just a fan of these wonderful creatures, we've got you covered. And now, here's Deborah Neiman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. We are joined once again by Dr. Jamie Stewart from the Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine, where she is an assistant professor. And today, we are going to be talking about something that, thankfully, I've never personally experienced, and that is vaginal prolapse in pregnant goats. Welcome to the show again, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you for having me again.
The first thing I want to do, because I think there needs to be some clarity on exactly what we're talking about today. So can you first tell us exactly what is a vaginal prolapse and also how that compares to a uterine prolapse? Because they are two completely different things.
Absolutely. That's a very important distinction because as a veterinarian, it's very important to me to know what the situation is at hand. And there's a couple reasons for that I'll get into. So when we're talking about the reproductive tract, you know, the vagina is the most external portion, and then it's connected to the cervix, and then obviously connected to the uterus, which is where the babies are being housed. And so all of it should be inside. But we're talking about the degree of which things are outside. And when we get more worried, vaginal prolapse is definitely a concern, but it's a little bit lower on our concern meter versus something like a uterine prolapse, which, you know, has a much farther distance to go. And it's going to be stretched out more. It's connected to more important things. So we tend to worry more about the uterine prolapses. So it does make a difference when you're calling your veterinarian to tell which of those structures you believe is out. And when you're looking at them, there's some key differences. One, if she's still pregnant and there's not any kids outside the body, then it's most likely a vaginal prolapse. Because obviously, if the kids are inside the uterus, then the uterus is still inside the body. Whereas if she recently just kitted and you see something hanging out, we would be more concerned about it being a uterine prolapse. But we do see some vaginal prolapses after birth too, so it's not uncommon. So if you're trying to differentiate, is this a uterus or a vagina? Usually size is a big indicator. Vaginal prolapses are going to be much smaller. They're going to be more rounded in appearance and smooth in appearance. Whereas we talked about the placenta at one of our last meetings. So the placenta has the little, what we call the dots on them, or the buttons, the cotyledons are the appropriate name. And so they attach to the maternal caruncle, which are these bumps on the uterus. So when you see the uterus is out, it's actually going to be this really big red structure, and you're going to see the buttons all over it. So it's going to be lumpy, bumpy, down, hanging out, sometimes past the hocks. So that's a really important distinction. And when you think about all the blood flow that's coming to the uterus during parturition, now all of that, what we call the uterine artery that supplies the main part, is now exposed to the world. And that's why we're really concerned. So when you have a uterine prolapse, we absolutely don't want you to put her on a trailer. We want her to stay as still as possible so we can try to get that back in before that uterine artery ruptures. Whereas if you have a vaginal prolapse, we want you to call us the next morning, but you don't need to call us at 2 a.m. So that's why that's such an important distinction, because the uterus, we definitely want to get out there ASAP. And a lot of times the vaginal prolapses will go in and out first, and then they eventually get to the point where they end up staying out just because of all the pressure.
Okay. So the vaginal prolapse, let's talk about it just in pregnant goats to start. I know I said I've never had one, but I have sort of, you know, seen something that was maybe the beginning of it, but it was the super basic, you know, the goat is a few days away from giving birth. And when she's laying down, it looks like, you know, something I don't know, maybe a little bigger than a quarter. And there's skin inside the vulva. It's really small, and it's only when she's laying down, but then when she stands up, it disappears. You don't see it anymore. And that's the most I've ever seen. So can you talk a little bit about how far away from kidding, a week away, 2 weeks away from the due date, you can see a vaginal prolapse, and then kind of how it progresses from that just looks a little bit of skin inside the vulva to at what point do you need to start getting concerned?
Absolutely. So we can see them, you know, as far as commonly a month away from parturition. So it can occur, you know, quite a little bit of ways out, sometimes even, you know, farther away from parturition than that. There's a few factors that it will depend on. It'll depend on the age. So some of the older females might be a little bit more prone to having it occur sooner. It's going to also depend on diet and the number of babies. And so the reason for that is that there's a lot of abdominal pressure, especially when you have 3-4 babies. Sometimes, you know, some of these goat breeds are prone to having quads and sometimes more than that. That takes up a lot of room in the abdomen. And so where the diet comes in with that is that if the hay that they're getting is not really that high quality, to maintain their energy demand for feeding all of those babies also is they're going to continuously eat more and more hay. And if it's not the highest quality, it increases the bulk in the rumen. So there's more fiber in the rumen. So then that's taking up more room in the abdomen. So as you're taking up all this space in the abdomen, then the only thing that's left that can move is that vagina. And so that leads to the other predisposing factor, which is overconditioned does and ewes, that again, you have those extra fat stores in the abdomen that then are taking up more space. So really it's just what's left to get pushed out. And that's where the vagina ends up going. Other things that you might consider as factors is if they're on a lot of clover, which has a high estrogen component, that tends to make those muscles a lot more kind of relaxed. And so that makes them predisposed for getting it. And the last thing to be concerned about is the fact that vaginal prolapses are considered genetic. So if you have a female that has a prolapse, especially if it's her first season, you can expect that she's going to continuously prolapse year after year. So be prepared for that if it's a female that you want to keep, because it can be a little bit of a pain to maintain these.
Okay. And so at what point should you call the vet?
So our general rule of thumb, so we end up giving these grades. So the one that you were describing where it kind of comes out where they're laying down versus like it sucks back in when they're laying up, they're really close to parturition. We consider those grade ones and really not of much concern as long as it's going back in. Where we do get concerned is where it starts staying out for a prolonged period of time. And the reason why we get concerned about that, it has to do with parturition, because as I was explaining, the cervix is connected to that vagina. And so if the vagina is out, the cervix is being pushed closer to outward. And so one, that puts the cervix exposed to the outside elements, which means that there's a risk that you could get some infection going in through the cervix to the uterus and causing some kind of an infection with that baby, what we would call a placentitis, which we talked a little bit when we talked about the placenta. So it puts them at a risk for getting an infection that way. Also, with that cervix kind of being into the pelvis, when the baby's ready to induce parturition, it can't bump up against that cervix. And that's a key part of that labor process. We call it the Ferguson reflex, is where the baby bumps up against that cervix. And then that sends a trigger to the brain that triggers all the oxytocin to come down. And that's what triggers that cervix to start dilating. It's a whole reflex within itself. And it requires that baby to be able to have contact with that internal part of the cervix, which if that cervix is constantly prolapsed out, it cannot. So we've seen a lot of issues with some of these chronic vaginal prolapses, even if they are going out and in, just not dilating their cervix because they're not getting the appropriate signals. So certainly if it's staying out for more than just when she stands up, maybe it stays out for a little bit, we would still be concerned, because that's when we would want to consider putting a stitch in so that it stays in so that the baby can have the contact with it.
Okay, so you just mentioned putting a stitch in, which is one thing that you can do to deal with this. So I'd like you to talk about that. And then also, if anybody, you know, Googles this, you're going to find prolapse retainers. So also talk about like when you would decide to do a stitch versus a retainer and what the pros and cons are of the two different options.
Absolutely. So the retainers are nice because a lot of owners can have them on hand. You can buy them at the store. You'll see them called the prolapse retainers, the prolapse paddles, or prolapse spoon. I've heard that one too. So it looks like kind of like a big spoon that basically it's got these little wings on the side. And basically the idea is it's easier for owners if you've got the ones that are kind of going in and out and you want to prevent it from getting stuck out. So those are ones you just put the little spoon part into the vagina, and then the little wings, you can put a little bit of umbilical tape or some kind of string, and you can actually just tie it to the fur there to hold that in. The nice thing about it is usually if you get it tied to the fur is when she does start to kid, is that when she's kidding, because they can shed the fur out, it can actually remove the paddle and she can go ahead and give birth past that. Or usually she just kicks the retainer out while she's birthing. So that's a nice thing about them. The big disadvantages, she can also prolapse through it, which we've seen more common than not. And that's usually when we get called, is because she's continuously prolapsing through it. It's not keeping it in. Some people will, again, something that owners can do at home, you know, if they've got the supplies for this before needing the vet, is you can actually pair that prolapse retainer with a harness system. And basically, it's just a big harness you put around it, and it's got a little area back there that just holds that retainer in so that she can't push it out. So obviously, the big disadvantage with that is if she tries to lamb or kid or all the interchangeable terms there, it's stuck in there because, you know, it's got something that's holding it in there. So what we say for those is you have to be able to watch them closely. So you have to be watching them for signs of labor, because as soon as she goes in labor, you need to take that harness off. So versus the stitch. So the stitch is something that the veterinarian would come do. We usually come out, we'll put an epidural in a lot of times, which will just stop her from straining, give her a little relief from all the straining. And then we'll, you know, make sure that the vagina goes back in. And then there's a few different stitches. Most commonly, you'll see us do a modification of what we do in cattle called the Buhner stitch. And we basically just kind of go up and we come back down and then we tie it up into a little knot. And it just kind of closes it together like that. You'll see us usually stick a couple fingers in there to make sure that she can still urinate out of it. And so the main way that we do that is we tie it at the bottom. And again, if you get it on correctly, she is not going to be able to give birth through it. So that tends to be another issue with that. It's a very good retainer in that it will definitely hold that vagina in, but it's also not going to let her give birth through it. There is a modification of that. Again, it's something that we've adapted from the cattle industry called a Barth blowout stitch, where we actually, instead of tying it at the bottom, we can actually just put a little suture on there and just suture the actual umbilical tape closed, so that while she's straining, it should hold enough that she can't blow out through it. But when she starts actually having those big abdominal contractions, it should break. And just kind of like with everything else, like the risk of that, of us putting not something that's as tight as a tie in there, is that if she's straining hard enough with the vaginal prolapse, she could still break through it and we would have to go back in and tie it up again. But again, the risk of her having any damage done because it's not going to break is going to be much lower, because she should be able to break through it.
Okay. And so when you talk about damage, what exactly could happen if you don't snip those sutures in time?
Death of the baby is going to be the biggest one, because, you know, she's going to be having those abdominal contractions. She's going to be basically detaching that placenta, all of the normal process, except the baby's just not coming out. Other things are you can get some serious damage to that vaginal wall. So you can get cuts, nicks, things like that, of it trying to push out and just not being able to, or getting cut on that umbilical tape as it's trying to come out.
Okay. So once the kid is out, then are you pretty much done with the whole problem of the vaginal prolapse? Like, it pretty much stays put?
90% of the cases, yes. And I say that because, yeah, there are just a few problem children that, yeah, once you take all that bulk out of the abdomen of those babies, that they basically stop prolapsing. But there are a few that, if it's a matter of a lot of estrogenic influence or age, things like that, that are causing her to be predisposed to it, then there's the rare few that you might see some after birth that continue, but that's in the minority.
Okay. So if your goat has like successfully given birth and everything and passed the placenta, you are pretty much out of the woods at that point. Like, you're not going to see any kind of a prolapse after that.
Some people are concerned about whether or not she's going to have a uterine prolapse after she's had a vaginal prolapse. And it's a good concern to have always about a uterine prolapse, but there's really no evidence that having a vaginal prolapse makes you prone to getting a uterine prolapse, unless it's something like that estrogenic influence or something like that. I'd be a little bit more concerned to watch over. The biggest things that we worry about with the uterine prolapses occurring are the dystocias, where she's been going at it for a long time, because the uterine prolapse is more of a low calcium problem. So the uterus is exhausted, and then sometimes there's a little eversion of the horn that caused her just to continue to strain and strain until it comes out. So it's really not related to the process of the vaginal prolapse, where it's just a lack of space in the abdomen. So the uterine prolapse is more of a regular pathology following the dystocia. So there's not a lot of relationship between the two.
Okay. One of the things that popped into my head today when I was thinking about our episode is that way back in the beginning, when I first started raising goats, I remember there were people online who talked about pulling out the uterus if you pulled too hard, if you were trying to help a big kid. And I don't know why I don't hear that much anymore, but I used to hear it quite a bit. Is that any kind of a real concern? It seems to me like that wouldn't happen with like a normal healthy goat. Like, you're not going to be able to pull the uterus out.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think mechanistically. It would be very, very difficult to do. And again, most of the time it might seem like it's related, because if it's a big kid and she's been going at it for a while, it's more of a problem that uterus is just exhausted and it's not able to start going down after parturition, because it just doesn't have the calcium stores to start contracting like it needs to get down. And so it might just seem like it's kind of related, because you would have an exhausted uterus after her trying to deliver such a big kid.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Because I know a lot of times people see something and they misinterpret what they're seeing. So it totally makes sense that if she's exhausted and you're pulling and then the uterus comes out, you think you caused it, when in reality, you didn't. It just happened because of all the other things that were already happening in the doe's body.
Right.
Okay. Is there anything else that people need to know about prolapses?
A lot of times, it's common to see that you'll get a rectal prolapse along with it. So, and again, it's nothing to be of super concern about if it's, you know, continuously going back in. And most of the times when you fix, you know, if you fix a vaginal prolapse, it makes her stop straining enough that the rectal prolapse stays in. But we can, a lot of times, if those are happening at the same time, we'll put a stitch in both places. And you do have to be concerned a little bit when we put the stitch in around the rectum about her becoming constipated. So we have to always make sure that they're able to defecate and everything okay. But otherwise, you know, we really recommend just not breeding these females again, because especially like if they have it in their first season, it's going to continuously be a problem. There are permanent stitches that can be put in. I guess they're not really stitches per se, but they're very invasive. And basically you end up having, and this would be, you know, going into a referral hospital kind of situation, where you would have to go in and basically you tack the vagina from the inside. So it's one that it's a permanent pexy procedure is what they call it, because you're pexying the vagina to the inside so that it can't come out. But again, the ethical dilemma comes into the fact that we shouldn't really be breeding these females. So should we be doing these procedures that are going to allow us to continue to propagate her genes onto females that we might want to use for breeding? So that comes down to that issue to think about when you're trying to pursue something like that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I think a lot of people will find this really helpful, and I think we probably cleared up a lot of misconceptions.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's it for today's show. If you haven't already done so, be sure to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any episodes. To see show notes, you can always visit fortheloveofgoats.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/lovegoatspodcast. See you again next time. Bye for now.